You're listening to the Back Home Network, presented by Home Field Apparel.
And welcome, Hoosier fans, to this week's edition of Assembly Call Radio, where each week we discuss the most important topics in the world of Indiana basketball. This is our 282nd edition of Assembly Call Radio, and it is our 927th episode overall of the Assembly Call, recorded on the evening of March 15th, 2023, one day early so we don't conflict with Thursday's NCAA tournament games that everyone wants to watch. I'm your host, the coach, Brian Tonsoni. And let's begin this edition of the Assembly Call how we begin every edition of the Assembly Call, and that is with our Hoosier Proud banner moment.
And Indiana is the national champion.
When it comes down, Indiana will be champion.
Smart takes a shot.
The Hoosiers have won the national championship.
This week's banner moment happened on Sunday when the Indiana Hoosiers were announced as a 4 seed in the Midwest region of the NCAA tournament. It has been far too long for Hoosier fans since having a sweat-free selection Sunday. Look to the upper right portion of your company bracket, and you'll find your Indiana Hoosiers listed playing against the 13-seed Kent State Flashes. The Hoosiers are poised to make a good run in this tournament as they have two special players in Trace Jackson Davis and Jalen Hood Schifino, the kind of players that it takes to win in the NCAA tournament. The supporting cast is also capable of playing solid basketball. Indiana is the favorite. Do not lose sight of that despite the narratives that are going around. Kent State is good, and they can beat the Hoosiers. But this is what the tournament is all about. But go into Friday confident and sure that Indiana's played well enough to be considered a top team in the NCAA by earning a protected seed and wearing those white jerseys. Let's get it done, Hoosiers. Okay, now it's time for me to introduce my co-host for the week. To the left, he's the Rob Senderoff of Girls Youth Sports Coaching in Cincinnati. He makes phone calls to schedule and recruit players when he's not supposed to, and he's the president emeritus of the Robert Johnson Fan Club and one of the world's most respected and fun-loving bracketologists.
The best of you sports coaching, you know that we got them. When it comes to analytic trends, you know he can spot them. For first-class bracketology, if you want the top, you gotta go bottoms. If you want the top, you gotta go bottoms. If you want the top, you gotta go bottoms.
It's the one and only Andy Bottoms. Andy, what's your bottom line here this last week on Indiana basketball?
I mean, like you said, it was exciting to see IU be so safely in the tournament, not be sweating it out, not have a bunch of people asking, are they in, are they out, as you and I have grown accustomed to, I believe, feel like in recent years. So that was a relief for sure. I thought they got the seed that they were expected to get and the seed they probably deserved in the long run, and got a tough matchup out of it, as everybody's been really digging into that over the course of the week. So I know we'll talk more about that, but always excited for IU to be in the tournament, and no better time than the first couple of days of the NCAA tournament by any stretch for me. Conference tournaments are great. There's still just something about the nostalgia of the NCAA tournament. So really looking forward to that getting started tomorrow in earnest, even though we've had these games the last couple of nights, and until the first one tonight, they've at least all been close. So maybe that's a good sign for the tournament. The most recent game notwithstanding.
And to my right, he is the head of sports media department at Indiana, and he is one of the godfathers of IU Sports Podcasting, having hosted Crimson Cast since the days of Branch McCracken. Ladies and gentlemen, it's Galen Clavio. Doctor, what are your thoughts on tournament week?
I'm just delighted that we're here. Finally, a long, cold winter, and then we get essentially a month of basketball. Sometimes it's great, sometimes it's terrible, like last night's Pitt Mississippi State game. That was pretty atrocious, but I still loved it, watched the whole thing. I'm just excited, A, that we're back to watching basketball in this format, and B, that Indiana's in it, that they're a good team, they're a top 15 team within the field. That makes it all the more exciting, and it's great to be back with you guys talking about it all.
Well, we're excited about what's going to happen this weekend. We're excited to talk about it here for the next hour or so, and we'll give you a lot of information. What's in store this week? We're going to talk a little bit about bracketology lessons and some bracket predictions of all of us. Segment two, we're going to dive into some more IU Kent State scouting report, keys to victory, and our predictions. And then segment three, we have a boatload of really outstanding questions, both from Twitter and from our community. All of that coming up this week on Assembly Call Radio. And now let's talk about our presenting sponsor.
Home Field Apparel, well on for the team.
This edition of Assembly Call Radio, just like all shows on the Back Home Network, is presented by our friends at Home Field Apparel, where they have the largest collection of vintage IU apparel that you'll find anywhere, with beloved logos like two different versions of the Bison and so many more. Bottom line is that Homefield has something for fans and grads of pretty much every school, with unique vintage logos for all of them. And no matter what you buy, you know it'll be comfortable and the colors will last through many washings. Plus, you're supporting an Indiana-based company that came up through Kelly. What could be better than that? And they have the, I'm going to mispronounce it, but the mystery boxes. I signed up for the mystery box. First shipment is on the way. A couple more t-shirts to my massive collection. Looking forward to that. Love the bomber jackets that are been coming out. The long sleeve t-shirts. I'm a long sleeve t-shirt guy. I've been wanting long sleeve home field for a long time. So there's a lot of products for your favorite team and for any team. So go to homefieldapparel.com and use our promo code HOME for 15% off your entire first order. That's promo code HOME for 15% off. Once again, the website is homefieldapparel.com. Wear one for the team. All right, gentlemen, it's time. We spent a lot of time trying to predict the actual bracket, and that came out on Sunday. And what are your initial thoughts? We'll start with you, Galen, on how did the NCAA committee do, in your opinion, overall in seeding the 68 teams?
I thought they did fine. I didn't think there was anything outlandish in what they did. There were certainly some quibbles that I had about individual teams. I think that that happens every year. But, you know, I think Andy will probably back me up on this. Like, we've had years where, like, I remember when your Air Force got in, and it's like, what on earth is Air Force doing in the field? They were like 78th in the RPI. It made zero sense whatsoever. There really wasn't anything like that this year. And, you know, I mean, there was certainly an argument for leaving Rutgers out. There was an argument for leaving Clemson out. Looks like both of those teams are going to lose in the first round of the NIT as Morehead State's about to take Clemson down as we speak. So I thought they did well. You know, it's interesting because maybe their biggest mistake in terms of their own criteria was not ranking Kansas at least as the number two overall seed, but that might have actually helped IU. So who am I to complain about that? But no, overall, there's plenty of years I've had to complain about what the committee's done. This wasn't one of them.
You know, the more I do this, the more I understand what they go through in trying to field the bracket and the entire field of setting at 1 through 68. And after I have a few disagreements, I go back and say, okay, I kind of understand what they might have done there, even if I would have gone a different direction. Andy, your thoughts on how well the committee did this year in placing teams in the bracket?
Yeah, I think in general it's one of those where it underscores the challenge of doing it because you're trying to predict the behavior of other people. And a lot of times I get into, well, these teams are pretty close, and you know, my default position is, well, at least if I'm going to be wrong, I'm going to be wrong doing what I would do. And so, you know, like Maryland and West Virginia, I had them flip-flop. To me, Maryland couldn't prove they could win a game away from home. West Virginia had a bunch of losses. The metrics were better. Committee didn't see it that way. That's one thing. You know, Illinois over Penn State was one where they beat them three times. Illinois had two good wins in the non-conference and then did very little in the Big Ten. I can live with being wrong, because I think at least I had sound logic on it. The only team that I really struggled with was Florida Atlantic. I think it's, if you want to penalize Texas A&M, and they were, you know, those are the two teams I missed by two seed lines. If you want to penalize Texas A&M for playing a poor non-conference strength of schedule, particularly after Buzz Williams and his diatribe last year after getting left out, okay, fine. But for Florida Atlantic, you know, they're 31-3 overall, only 29-3 against Division I. You know, one at Florida, beat you know, one Conference USA easily, had some quad one and two wins, didn't have any bad losses. A team that was on the rise coming into the season, so really struggled to find people that would play them. I just struggled to hold them to that standard of, well, you could have, you know, you didn't show us enough, you didn't beat enough high-quality teams when they really didn't get those opportunities, but were pretty dominant in what they did do. And I thought that, one, to put them as a nine seed was poor. I could see an eight, and then to match them up with arguably the best eight seed in Memphis is, you know, kind of another challenge as you match those up. That was really probably the only one that I really struggled to see the logic behind. I know they kind of asked Chris Reynolds about it, and I think like most of the answers he gave, he was pretty, pretty terse, I guess I would say, not in a rude way, but just did not get into a ton of detail. It was the same way on the committee reveal of the top 16. And you watch that stuff, you're trying to like take away something more from what they did, and he just wasn't giving it to you. And so, you know, didn't really get into a ton of detail about why Florida Atlantic was ended up where they were. But, you know, overall, it's a tough job. I think we probably understand that as well as anybody in terms of the challenges that come from figuring out where to put teams. And I guess if at the end of the day you only have a legitimate gripe about one of them, or a major gripe about one of them, I guess that's pretty good.
Yeah, the Texas A&M was that first seven, and that gave us fits all bracketing the last 3-4 weeks, whether it was Creighton. We ended up with Creighton there, Texas A&M at the six. We had Kentucky there for a while, and that there was a bunch of teams in that 5-6 range, and there was one left over. Which was the team going to be left over? The committee picks Texas A&M, and obviously we went a little different direction. But overall, a good thing. Andy, back to you real quick, and then Galen, 4 seed for Indiana. What does that say about the Indiana team? They went through some injuries this year, had some up and down play, but ultimately the 15th best seeded team in the bracket. Your thoughts on the placement of the Indiana Hoosiers?
I thought it was pretty much spot on. I'm trying to remember now whether I had them as 14th overall or 15th, but they were right in that range where felt like, not that you couldn't see it at all, but seemed hard to envision them being bumped to a 5 seed. Based on what they had done. And I think overall, one thing for people to keep in mind is you look at some of the losses and even, you know, the number of losses with IU having 11, there were just not a lot of teams that didn't lose many games this year. And when you look at it that way, there are so many teams in that 10, 11, 12 loss range that normally you would think, man, that seems kind of high for them to get a seed that way. But I think when you step back and look at it and understand the Big Ten schedule that IU played, how they performed against that schedule, and the fact that they did it without a guy who at the beginning of the year was projected to be their second most important player. I think Jalen Huchefino has been everything people hoped he would be, but I still think everybody thought, hey, Xavier Johnson is going to be, you know, behind TJD, and their ability to adapt and do that without him has been really impressive. And if you think back to some of the things that we said you wanted at the beginning of the season, sure, you'd love to win the Big Ten, but we talked about top four finish. They tied for second, you know, wanting to be safely in the NCAA tournament. They did that. So I think all things considered, something to be proud of in that 4 seed range. And while they earned a tough matchup, even in that 4 seed range, I think that's true of a lot of the 4 and 5 seeds, because most of the teams that finished at the top of the best mid-major leagues ended up winning. And even if it wasn't the first place team that won, it was typically the second place team. And so there's a lot of teams that are going to face challenges in that area of the bracket. And I think not surprising that people are picking some upsets there, which they would normally do. And it's a little bit easier, I think, to project some of those this year as you look at the quality of the 12 and 13 seeds overall.
Galen, Indiana's a 4 seed. What does that tell us?
Tells us they were one of the top 16 teams in the country when you take everything into account, the resume, what they accomplished. You know, and this is something that I think when you ask some IU fans on social media, you'd think IU was one of the worst teams in the country. You know, and that's wild to think about, because ultimately when you look at what IU accomplished, who they beat, where they beat them, their successes on the road, the strength of schedule that they had, it was one of the toughest schedules in the country, top to bottom. This was a team that over the course of a season proved themselves to be, you know, in that range where they should have been a 4 seed. I mean, I had them right at 15th. I don't get a gold medal for that or anything, but it was heartening to see that kind of I was in line with the committee as far as where I thought they were. And look, I mean, it's always tough to judge these things. And I think you can look outside and and say, well, that team's playing better, or that team's got a better individual, player, a set of players that are doing things. But I thought Indiana overall throughout the season did exactly what they needed to do to put themselves in that spot. And the fact they did it, as Andy said, you know, without Xavier Johnson, and the fact that they did it without Race Thompson for a while, and coming back from 1-4 to start the conference to put themselves in that position, I think says a lot about how successful this season was relative to the rest of college basketball.
Yeah, we had them as 15 as well. And one of the things that's interesting is everyone talks about the quad numbers, and that they're great. But you also got to look inside the quad numbers. And one of the things that benefited Indiana's resume is that a lot of teams that they had quad two wins were quad one when they played them. And then they moved to quad two. And even though the numbers are in different spots, the committee knows that when you beat 33 net, 34 net, and 36 net or 37 Illinois, whatever they ended up, those three wins are some of the best wins you can get in quad two. I think that was kind of an unwritten or undisclosed thing if you just look at the raw numbers of the quad and offset some of those losses. So that was an eye-opening for me. So the Big Ten, who's advancing in the Big Ten? And it's always the narrative that the Big Ten gets teams in and then doesn't advance to the Sweet 16. But we only have, what, three teams that are going to be wearing the white jerseys? Or wait, four, Michigan State and an 8 seed. Do we have an 8 seed?
Iowa. I don't have the bracket. Maryland's an 8 and Iowa. So.
Okay, so we have several wearing the white jerseys. Are we going to get more than one or two into the Sweet 16 and stop the national narrative that the Big Ten just loads up and gets wins and then doesn't perform in the tournament? And is that a false narrative? It's hard to win in the tournament. You're talking about good quality teams, and I don't like that. If you don't get a certain number of teams, 16 teams are left. And it's matchups and it's other things like that. But how many teams in the Big Ten, and what do you think the Big Ten paths are like? Galen, we'll come to you first.
I'm terrible at picking who's actually going to advance. I will say I don't think the narrative's false. I don't think the narrative's false. And I think a lot of it is because the Big Ten is not offensively gifted enough in the tournament in the right ways historically, and by like the last 10 years or so. The teams that have broken through have been teams like Michigan under John Beilein, who ran – a system that didn't always necessarily produce Big Ten champions, but did produce teams that played really well in the NCAA tournament. As I look through the bracket, I think right now there's two teams I feel pretty good about making the Sweet 16. One of them is Indiana, and that's not just me being a homer, I don't think. It's because I like the matchups. I think they drew the weakest of the 5 seeds. I think that the 13 and the 12 in their sub-regional are both beatable. And I think Indiana does a bunch of things well enough, and they have 2-star players. Those are important elements. And I like Michigan State's path because I think Michigan State, first of all, I don't think USC is very good. I think the whole Pac-12 outside of UCLA is kind of trash. We'll find out if I'm right or not pretty quickly, I think, with that, as we've already got one team playing right now, as Arizona State's up against the Fighting Steve Alfords. But I think Marquette is – extremely overvalued right now. They're playing really well, but they have a roster comprised entirely of freshmen and sophomores. And that is a combustible mix, shall we say, when you get into the high pressure of the tournament. Plus, a little trivia question for you guys. Everybody knows Shaka Smart. When was the last time Shaka Smart made it past the second round of the NCAA tournament? You want to take a crack at that?
It was a VCU.
It's probably when he was still at VCU. Would be my guess.
It was the Final Four team at VCU. It has been forever since Shaka Smart made it past the second round of the tournament. We're talking 2011. So, you know, this is a guy who's kind of ridden on that since that. Now, you know, he's had, you know, was at VCU for a while. Texas didn't quite work out. I think he's a good coach. But that's a team that I think is ripe for an upset. And I think Michigan State is playing some pretty good ball, Big Ten tournament notwithstanding. The other team I would keep an eye on, and I can't believe that I'm saying this, but I actually think Illinois has got a good shot to get to the Sweet 16. I think whoever wins that game between Illinois and Arkansas, Kansas, like, you know, they won the national title last year. It was kind of out of nowhere. And I could absolutely see them running into a bad matchup with either of those two teams. I think Arkansas might be the bigger threat, but if Illinois gets by, I don't think that they're going to like back down from Kansas. So those are the three I feel good about. Everybody else I'm kind of iffy on. I think Northwestern's a poor value. I think Maryland has got a really terrible matchup against West Virginia, and Purdue is Purdue.
That's right. So you just talked about my national championship winner as a possible upset to Michigan State in the second round. If you go back to the coach's corner in the community, I surprised everyone with Marquette getting that far. And that'll tell you, honestly, I don't know. I think we're okay predicting what the bracket looks like, but I am never good at predicting the winners afterwards for some reason. Everyone comes to you like, oh, you're a bracketologist. You should know who's going to win the games. No, we spend so much time looking at the resumes that we probably need to spend some more time looking at, like you said, freshmen. I think they have guards, the Marquette guards. The Tyler Kolick guy can really operate, and they have two prolific scorers on the wings, and it's a guards game. It goes back to what you said about winning in the tournament. You have to have some offense in the tournament, and it has to be efficient. And I do think that's been a problem with the Big Ten, the pace, that they don't play with the pace that wins in the NCAA tournament. I agree 100%. I think that speaks well for Indiana because they have two NBA players. If those two NBA players can get loose and whatever defensive schemes against them by other teams, they find a way to take advantage of it. You got two special players. That's what wins in the NCAA. That's what I'm excited about. It's hard to win without those special players having the ability. You know, we talk all the time about closers and who can go get you points. There's going to be a tough game. You need people to go get you some points. I think IU has two of them, so I think that bodes well. I think Purdue will probably make the Sweet 16, but I don't think they'll go further than that. I think Memphis or FAU could give them a run. I think Indiana has a really nice path to get there. Other than that, I didn't even know we had 8 seeds in the Big Ten after putting the bracket together and forgot about it since Monday. I've slept for like 18 hours trying to get caught up. But I do think it would be nice for the Big Ten to get a few teams and stop that narrative, even though I do see what you're saying, that they don't play well once they get out of tournament play. Andy, your thoughts on the Big Ten?
Yeah, I think, you know, one of the challenges is that everybody beat each other up. So nobody ends up getting a high seed. You've got a 1, a 4, and then everybody else is essentially between a 7 and a 10. And if you think about it, based on the, you know, predictions or just, you know, higher seeded teams, you would expect that all but two of them will be out by the Sweet 16. And yet, I think that'll be viewed as a disappointment. I, you know, maybe somebody surprises. I don't really have too many Big Ten teams going very far in my bracket. I think it's one of those where I totally agree with what you said about not being as good at picking these as maybe we feel like we are predicting the field. I think you almost know too much, and you can talk yourself into or out of virtually anybody by the time you get it's all said and done, and then you're not totally sure who to look at. I think you know, I've got IU in the Sweet 16. I've got Purdue in the Sweet 16. I think those are the only two, to be honest with you. And I do have a few of them winning their first round matchups, but and I think that's the other thing about watching the Big Ten. I, you know, but for better or worse, we all watch a lot of Big Ten basketball, which may be deserving of some kind of award at the end of the season. But, you know, you see these teams are all flawed in one way or another. And I think it's easy to get in the tournament as you're making your own picks and saying, hey, look, this team, I've seen this team play like crap against insert other, you know, mid-level Big Ten team here, and then you talk yourself out of them being able to win games. And so maybe somebody gets hot. I think just because they lose those games doesn't mean that, you know, it isn't a good league. But I do think they struggle with some of the high-level talent where we talk, you know, a lot of times in the offseason about where McDonald's All-Americans going. It's not to the Big Ten. Yeah. We talk about the officiating where these guys are just beating the absolute hell out of each other in some of these games. And then all of a sudden, if some of these games are officiated like the first few games in the first four have been, I mean, get ready. Now, that doesn't help IU, a team who fouls a lot as it is, even by Big Ten standards, if they call it that way. But I don't know that it prepares teams very well for that. And I do think there's validity to that piece of the argument. I don't think that means there aren't good basketball teams in the Big Ten. And I don't think that means we might not see somebody like a Michigan State maybe spring that kind of upset. I think you could see that with an Illinois. But you've also got a lot of teams in that 8, 9, 10 range where it's like, are they really expected to beat somebody? You know, I think Penn State has a tough matchup with the Texas A&M team, probably feel like was you know, underseeded at some point, and maybe Penn State could give somebody a good game. I think they can beat Texas A&M, to be honest with you, but I wouldn't be shocked if there's not very many Big Ten teams left. I just don't know that that's necessarily a moratorium on the league as a whole when it's all said and done.
So do we root for the Big Ten, or do you have angst against the Big Ten watching them all year long, and do we root for them, Galen?
It's entirely situated. I won't root for Purdue. I'm sorry. Yeah, I can't do it. I won't root for Iowa under any circumstances. And I might root for Maryland just because they still don't feel like a real Big Ten team to me. And I generally root for the rest of them up to the point where I feel like it maintains some kind of like reputational equilibrium. So like if Michigan State were to win another national title, I would feel a little threatened. So I'd probably only root for them to the Final Four. But a lot of it depends. It's like if I always think like if Purdue and Kentucky had played in the Elite Eight last year, who would I have rooted for? This way, I guess it would have been the Sweet 16, not the Elite Eight. I'm not sure still what the answer would have been on that. Thankfully, I never had to figure that out.
Andy, do you root for the Big Ten or you know, I've caught a lot of grief for rooting for other teams inside the Big Ten and buying home field apparel in the league. So your thoughts?
I would, by and large, I would say I will not. There might be a couple that I will that I'll root for, but it's more probably the ones I picked in my bracket for the purposes of that than it is because I of some other overarching feeling about the team. But I definitely have not ventured into the territory of buying home field apparel for another Big Ten school. There was a Minnesota shirt that I almost bought and then I just couldn't do it.
My wife probably wishes I was more like you, Andy, and not buying some of that gear. But all right, so
everyone, well, it's not that I'm not buying anything. I'm just not buying that stuff.
Who are your favorites and what are your traditions? Jared tweeted out that, you know, the eve of the NCAA tournament is better than Christmas Eve, and there's a lot of traditions around Christmas. What traditions do you guys have, if any, in watching the tournament, and who do you think will be cutting down the net in a couple of weeks? Andy, we'll start with you.
Well, I don't even have an answer to your last question yet. I haven't finished my bracket yet. I've gotten close. I spent some time today after work, but it's one of those where, like you said, sometimes I'd be better if I just sat down in 5 minutes and wrote teams in, but I haven't done that yet. So that part I don't know. In terms of traditions, I mean, for me, it's just typically finding somewhere to watch games and not working. It was about 10 years ago, I think, was one of the first times I had not taken the day off, but I had just started a new job like the week before. So I was like, well, this probably doesn't set a great precedent by taking off immediately. Although I would find out that my boss at the time was a huge college basketball fan and invited everybody to meet up somewhere, you know, that like late afternoon. So I may have worked for like the first set of, not even the whole afternoon session of games, like the first set of tip offs. And then that was it. But so that was about the only time. So really it's just doing that, getting together with friends, watching the games, staying up till they finish and getting up the next day and doing it all over again.
Galen, do you have a favorite and how do you watch the tournament?
I put a bracket together the other day and was so appalled at who I ended up having win. Not because I didn't like the teams, but because I was like, there's no way that these two teams are going to be in the championship. I'm not even going to mention them here. Okay. It's just one of those where this is a tough one to call. There's a lot of, there's not really a couple of dominant teams. There's nobody I really feel that confident about. I think the two or three favorites everybody keeps talking about, I just think have huge holes in their resume. And I think that the gap between the top and the bottom is a lot closer than it has been. So I am not going to make a final prediction until tomorrow morning, probably. And then I'm going to hate myself for like 3 days for finally deciding on that. But that's my tradition, filling out brackets that create self-loathing in myself, Coach. I'm looking forward to continuing that tradition. No, this has always been, you know, I was spoiled and blessed at the same time as a kid. We moved into a house when I was 11 years old that had a big dish satellite. And when my dad finally figured out how to work it, because this was like the early 90s and these were things hard to figure out, we figured out right around March. And guess what? We could get every tournament game. We didn't have to just get the, you know, CBS feed with the live look in. So early on, I started watching every single game, at least a part of it. And I've continued that till this day. And that's included like 2003 when I was living in Iowa and having to watch that horrible early CBS stream where the video would cut out every 20 seconds. Some of you might remember that. But now I pull a bunch of TVs into one room. I sit there, I invite people over, and I just watch for 12 hours. And then I fall asleep and I wake up and I do it again the next day. And that's what I'm looking forward to the most. I don't travel. Last year, I took the family to Disney World for spring break. And I remember watching the IU Wyoming game from like my hotel room in Disney. And then I ended up watching the rest of the games on the beach. Instead of having fun and being on the beach, I'm at the beach bar, like watching games all day. So that's essentially what I do. I'm just a vegetable for 4 days. And then I start it all over again for the next weekend.
I truly think people don't understand in some cases, like to Galen's point, like taking you back to, okay, well, I really hope we get the game that I want to see. Right. And then if you did, when they would do the live look-in and either your screen, the game you wanted to watch would go away entirely, or was so small in the corner that you had to stand right up in front of the TV to get any semblance of what was going on. Or they would take it off and they would just have the score and something would happen, but you wouldn't know. Yeah. And then eventually they would go to the next game, the next game, the next game, and go do that. Yeah, it's, I mean, ridiculous that we ever had to live that way. But, yeah. You know.
I remember when DirecTV had the package where you could get the tournament, just the tournament games. And it was like the most amazing thing. And that was what I had experienced for like 8 years prior to that. I was glad finally everybody else had that capacity.
Yeah, I had a TV go out yesterday. So there is one being shipped as we speak and will be here at some point tomorrow. So the fourth TV is working.
You need to get in the car, drive to Tippecanoe Mall, and like go buy one. They had none.
Well, I have to have a 40-inch TV to fit this place down here. And I looked online, and none were in stock. And I'm like, all right, I just ordered one. It just started freezing, and I said a few choice words. Not now, because not this weekend can the fourth TV. I mean, how bad is that, right? But I'll miss the first set of games because I got to teach. I do have eighth period prep, and my principal is a basketball guy, so he said go home as soon as my last class is over. But I'll miss a game or two. But it is four TVs. I told you, and now I feel really bad about my pick, Marquette. But more so than that, I think the reasoning that you said that I don't think the favorites are going to win this year. So I went and tried to pick. I had Marquette, UCLA, and I didn't really like it because there's flaws in both of those teams. You've mentioned the Marquette flaws. UCLA has a key injury to a defensive player. Houston has some questions about you know, they're number one in all the metrics, and they're in Indiana's way. But it is going to be a year where I think there's going to be some surprise teams. Whether I say Marquette and someone else says somebody else, Arizona has a capability. Yep. There's just so many teams, right?
My final was Arizona-Gonzaga, so you can understand why I was so freaked out. But I do think if last year taught us anything, it's that if there's – and I understand the Marquette pick. I was actually considered them until I saw the youth, and that concerned me. But I think teams that know how to play offense, that's where college basketball is at right now, and that's what I'm looking for more than anything else when I'm picking brackets.
So maybe we helped you as you get your brackets done before noon tomorrow and then pull up and get those TVs ready. But, okay, coming up here on the assembly call, we'll zoom in on Indiana's matchup Friday night against Kent State. We know it'll be a challenge, but how big do we think that challenge is? We'll talk about keys to the victory. So stick here with us on the assembly call.
The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Man, there's been so many podcasts with scouting reports. I haven't had a chance. I've just caught a couple. But we can go through. Jared put some questions on there. I think that's some pretty good things, and we can shorten that one, this segment up a little bit and get to the questions, because we have some really good questions. So,
yep. Well, Nevada is not doing very much to to reassure people that they should have been invited to the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, this is not great.
Now, admittedly, many of the teams who were passed over for that spot have done very little in the NIT to prove that either, but I think that's a little bit tougher to to do it.
Pac-12 trying to show me that I don't know what I'm talking about, which they're probably right about. So, yeah.
Isn't it those conferences that are really bad, then all of a sudden make the run? ACC last year, right? Bad conference. Yeah. Two teams in the Final Four.
Yeah,
that's what's so frustrating about that Big Ten narrative.
I can't wait for the ACC to do it again this year, and then everybody,
But well, it speaks to your offense. It speaks to the athleticism instead of the brute, you know, beat everybody up mentality of the Big Ten. The Big East with Villanova plays a certain style, and then you got some offense in the ACC. But we'll see. All right, let's do it. Here we go.
Hi, this is AJ Moyer. What's the only thing better than upsetting Duke in the Sweet 16? Celebrating it with friends afterwards. Join Jared, Andy, Ryan, and Coach for the assembly call after every IU basketball game. Go Hoosiers.
Welcome back to the assembly call. I'm Brian Tonsoni. I'm here with Andy Bottoms and Galen Clavio, and AJ, nothing's ever going to beat that upset over Duke in the Sweet 16, but maybe another upset in the Sweet 16 over a guy named Calvin Sampson might get a little bit close and make a lot of us really happy, but time will tell. Our main segment tonight is brought to you by our new sponsor at True Blood Real Estate. Jim Trueblood is a longtime friend of Jared's and the founder and owner of True Blood Real Estate, where he's been helping people in Indiana buy and sell properties since 2006. And starting this season, True Blood Real Estate is the exclusive and official real estate partner of IU Athletics, with a team of talented agents to serve you in Bloomington and throughout Indiana. If you're looking to buy or sell a estate in Indiana, you need to experience the True Blood Advantage. Go to truebloodre.com to learn more. That's truebloodre.com, and tell them Assembly Call sent you. All right, IU versus Kent State, fellas. We got about three or four just general questions. So much information out there. Some really good pods across the Indiana basketball podcast landscape with a lot of thoughts about the game. Go listen to that. Listen to us. But it's a 4-13. Indiana is favored. They're favored by 4. I think the spread's a little short. I think Indiana is poised to do well in this game. Obviously, they have to play well. But what scares us going into this game as the favorite in this first-round matchup? Andy.
I think for me the big thing is the ball pressure and the veteran guards that Kent State has, and Sincere Carey leading the way, and also Malik Jacobs. And I think as you look at that and you look at some of the statistics, if they can force IU into turnovers, that's one of the things they do really well defensively. In games that IU has struggled this year, getting sloppy with the ball, being a little too casual has been a challenge. And so I think that's really the biggest part of it, is how you deal with that. And also their ability to potentially get IU in foul trouble. Backcourt depth, don't need to tell anybody to listen to this, is not a strength of IU at this point. IU has been a little handsy at times on defense, and like I said before, has gotten into some foul trouble even by Big Ten standards, which are pretty loose, quite honestly. And so I think, you look at that, I think if IU can take care of the basketball, stay out of foul trouble, I think they'll be all right. But those are the things that potentially scare me, and just kind of having a veteran team who is tough and not really scared of a lot. They will be talking. I've watched some Kent State games. They will be talking a lot during the game. And so can you keep your composure in the face of that? And they are not afraid of IU. I can guarantee you that. So I think that's one thing based on some of the teams they played, playing Gonzaga tight, playing Houston tight earlier this year. I think they believe that they can compete with anybody and have shown that over the course of the year. So I think that's really the big thing. And, you know, if IU can do those couple things well, I think they'll be all right.
I think where that manifests itself with me is how does Indiana attack the ball screen defense that Kent State chooses? I watched the first half of the Toledo game before we went on the show. They do some hard hedging. They will switch depending on who's setting the ball screen. But they're aggressive there, and that's where Jalen at times has been loose with the ball, either just with the dribble getting poked away or his passing gets tipped and those things. And that's a team that turns the ball over. I think, can we get that ball out to the lift and then into Trace Jackson Davis? How are they going to tag on the backside as TJD rolls if TJD is the ball screener? So the ball screen attack. And I also, the issue for me that is of interest is, how are we going to guard their north-south game? They like to drive and kick. They like to do some side ball screens from the portion of the game that I saw. And in Indiana's ball screen defense is going to have to be on par and sharp, because I think this is a ball screen game. If Indiana can win the ball screen game, I think they're going to have a really good chance of winning, and I expect them to do that. But those are the key things, and handling those turnovers in against that defense, and then being able to guard the bounce is what scares me. But not so much Jalen Hood-Schifino, but Trey's got had some trouble at times, and then do they switch and get matchups elsewhere? We saw that against Penn State caused some problems. You got to guard the bounce, and you got to guard that ball screen. That's what scares me. Galen, what scares you for Indiana?
A lack of engagement. I mean, you guys are right on the X's and O's related things. I think those are all excellent points. I think that Kent State provides some interesting matchup issues. I think that they're going to be they're going to be trying to make IU's life miserable. I'm not as worried about the turnovers right now. I mean, Penn State was trying to get into that as well. IU had one of their best games of the season against Penn State in terms of turnover. Only turned the ball over five times in that game, but they weren't engaged. Now, part of that, I think, was the short carryover from having finished their game at, 11:30 or whatever it was Eastern time, and then having to play again at 2:00 the next day. But to me, the biggest challenge that this IU team has faced all season has been, are they mentally and emotionally engaged and ready to go? And can they sustain that for maybe not even 40 full minutes, but 30 or 35 minutes? And when you look at where Indiana's faltered over the course of the last month and a half, really, it's really come from Trace Jackson Davis has performed, Jalen Hood-Schifino sometimes performs, and then other people don't. And this is a game where you cannot afford a no-show from Trey Galloway. You cannot afford a no-show from Miller Kopp. You cannot afford a mixed bag from Race Thompson, and you can't afford to get nothing out of your bench. IU's got to come. I think if IU plays their game, if they play to the maximum of their potential, they could beat Kent State by 12 or 13, maybe even more than that. They're that much more talented. But if they play scared, if they play disengaged, if they start to get down on themselves, as we've seen them do, that's where I think the problems will start, and that's what I'm most concerned about.
But that's a real good point about the auxiliary players. They can't afford to be bad. You at least have to have average games from them, or games where they don't hurt Indiana by not taking shots or by taking bad shots or by not guarding correctly. Yes, we have two outstanding players, but sometimes that can be taken away in possessions or things. So bench play, that's a really, really outstanding point about you need your bench players to be at their level or better in order to make a deep run to win any game in the tournament. And everyone, welcome. Jared Morris has joined us here on the show. Jared, how are you doing this tournament eve?
Man, I am doing great for so many reasons. Number one, it is tournament eve. And I mean, that means that we're on the cusp of one of the best sports weekends of the year. And I got to admit, man, I'm flying pretty high. I got to join Christian Watford and Derek Ellison on Ball from Assembly Hall today, which, you know, it made me, it was really cool because, you know, we started our show in 2011. Obviously, the like ninth or 10th show was the Watt Shot. And so, you know, we were spent a lot of time talking about Christian, talking about Derek. And so to be able to go on the show with them was a, that was a really cool experience. So I'm feeling good, man. Feeling good.
So even despite all of that jovial, you know, the happiness, what scares you about Indiana's game at 9:40 on Friday night?
I mean, I think there's several things that Kent State does that have presented challenges to Indiana at different points this year. You know, the pressure defense and kind of their tenacity and some of those things. As Galen said, if Indiana's not ready, that can really hurt Indiana. And so, you know, when I first started digging into this matchup, I wouldn't say I was pessimistic, but I was much more concerned. But with more time and thinking more about us and what we do, I'm less concerned. You know, we're going to be on 5+ days rest. When we've had 3 or more days of rest since Big Ten season started, we've been awesome. I mean, all of our best performances have come with 3 or more days of rest. And the performances that we all kind of look at and we're like, what was that team? Most of those have come on 2 days rest. Now, what will that mean in the round of 32? I have no idea. I don't care. I'm going to ignore those statistics once we win. But for this game, that makes me feel much better. Plus, you know, their guards are good. Their guards are going to pressure the ball. Our guards are also 6'6 and 6'4. Their guards are 6'1. I think the height can help make passes that can help get you out of some of that pressure. And at the end of the day, they don't have anybody who can hang with Trace. And so to me, in a worst-case scenario, you know, their offense I don't think is explosive enough to take advantage of us the way some others have. So I can see them getting a lead, but I think it'll be very hard for them to run away with it. And to me, in a worst-case scenario, the last 10 minutes, Trace has to just take the game over, and I feel pretty good that he could do that, just like Drew Timmy did for Gonzaga. So I respect our opponent. If we don't come to play, they can beat us. But the more that I've looked into it, the more confident I've become.
So let's flip the coin a little bit. What should Kent State be worried about as they play Indiana? Andy?
The best player
thoughts?
In America?
Jared, go ahead. I thought your name was Jared, not Ryan.
Someone has to play that role.
Ryan is just relishing how bad Nevada's defense is right now. I can tell you that. Their press break isn't much better. I mean, to me, I think it's Trace. I don't think there's a clear matchup. They don't have a ton of size. If IU is able to get past the ball pressure and get him the ball or get it to him in pick and roll scenarios, I don't know that there's a clear answer for that. Now, it's possible that they, like a number of other Big Ten teams, just collapse on him and dare somebody else to make shots. But he's proven adept enough to be able to pass out of that. I think he'll be ready for it. And so I think that if you're looking for a reason – is that, and I think what Jared said is true as well. I'm sure this will be met with them hitting, you know, 17 threes, but they don't seem like they play the type of offense that is, you know, IU has a type that gives them problems. They don't appear to be it. Doesn't mean they can't play that way in stretches. Doesn't mean they might not try some different things, but it seems like their DNA is not the DNA of the kinds of teams that really give IU trouble.
I think Trace is just a load, and they're going to have to send multiple people. And then that combine that with what Galen said about, you know, the bench players, the Miller Cops, the Tamar Bates, they're going to have to hit some shots and make some plays and make them pay for any way they try to take away. But that's going to be hard for them, I think, to guard Trace Jackson Davis. And I would imagine if – you know, I talked about the ball screen issue with them hedging. I'd imagine we're going to go into that low post action a lot early to see what they're doing and then go to the ball screen stuff maybe a little bit later. We'll see. But they have to send people. They don't have anyone who can go one-on-one. They have to just be, you know, putting everything in their scouting report to stopping Trace, and then the other things – that we have need to flow and hit off of that. Galen, your thoughts about, you know, Kent State, what are they sitting there thinking right now?
I'll take a different variation on the same theme, which is I think that they have to worry about Trace passing out of the post, because you're right, they're going to have to run players at him. I think that's the scout on them right now. And you can do that if you're a Michigan where you've got a 7-1 guy. And if you're, you know, if you've got uber athletic forwards that can collapse effectively, I don't think Kent State's got that. They haven't played a player like this in a while. And where Trace, I think, improved the most and became truly an All-American, you know, first teamer down the stretch this season was when he started looking out when he got the ball and was trying to spot people. And it's why he's gotten so frustrated when he's triggered really good passes and it hasn't resulted in shots. And I think that, you know, that's going to be a real challenge for Kent State, because I don't think that they're going to have their brains wrapped around exactly how to do that. I think you made a good point where it's like, first IU's got to get into the half court, because IU would really like to set things up and get the ball in position where Trace can do what he does. I think once Indiana figures out that rhythm and how to do that, that's going to be a real problem. The one other thing I'll also note is that IU, I think, wants to play faster than they were able to play in the Big Ten. The Big Ten teams really, outside of Iowa, tried to slow Indiana down, and Indiana managed to play that way. They had to sacrifice a lot of things. They had to sacrifice offensive rebounding. They had to sacrifice some other things, largely due to pace. And to watch Indiana play against a team that isn't thinking that way, or maybe doesn't have the capability of slowing them down, I think that Indiana's potential pace in this one could be a real problem.
Galen, you bring up something that I've been harping on for a couple of years, is modern basketball's pace. It goes back to your NCAA tournament narrative about the Big Ten. It goes about what wins in the tournament. You got to play with a little bit of pace, and that's fast break and transition, but it's also in the half court. Are you cutting hard? Are you getting into your execution of your sets quick in the shot clock and not waiting to the very end of the shot clock? You know, throw that ball into Trace and then have him go right away. If the double team comes, bam, move that ball around. But Indiana, when they play with the pace, they score. You saw that when they got desperate in the Penn State game. And they don't even shoot threes and they can still score because of the pace of play. And then they hit their big shots when they're getting stops. So it goes back again. I will tie this into, you get stops, you can run out. And I think they're going to have a hard time finding Trace Jackson Davis in transition. And I think our shooters get more free in transition as well. I think, again, those combinations of things Kent State has to be worried about. Your thoughts,
Coach? There's just a couple other things I wanted to add. One is a thing to potentially be concerned about, which is, you know, both of Kent State's guards, again, they're small, but they're quick, they're good at getting into the lane, and they draw fouls. I think what would concern me is if Jalen gets into early foul trouble, because he is our best ball handler. If they're going to be playing that kind of pressure defense on Trey and Tamar, we could have problems. I mean, just think back to the Michigan State game. And that's where, if that happens, I could see a scenario where Kent State goes on a run like Michigan State did. So I don't think that you have Jalen play defense scared, you know, but I think you have Jalen play defense smart, where he needs to be on the court because we don't have a good ball handler behind him. And so he's got to be smart and not pick up fouls. You know, if you have to give a guy a shot or give up a guy a drive because he beat you, let him go. His value is too important. The other thing is, you know, turnovers are a big storyline, right? Because they force a ton of turnovers. And one of the things I did when I went and looked through all the data on our rest, one of my hypotheses was, well, when we're rested, we probably turn the ball over less. That actually wasn't the case. In those two data sets, our turnovers, it was about 11.5 and 11.8 per game. It was almost exactly the same. And one of our best performances of the year was at Illinois, where we turned the ball over 18 times. And so the thing is, even if the other defense does force turnovers, if we're able to play fast and get out in transition, and if they don't have an answer for Trace, we can still succeed in a game like that. Now, I don't think that'll happen without Jalen, because then the turnovers could really pile up. But I'd say that just to say, even if we do turn it over a little bit more than we want, that's not necessarily a harbinger of doom, because we've succeeded in games like that before.
And we haven't turned, as Galen, you said, we haven't been turning the ball over lately,
right?
in even scary numbers.
It's weird. I mean, there's two different types of turnovers with this IU team. There's the wasteful ones on fast breaks, but generally when they've been making those, they've won the game because they've been out, they've been pushing, they've been scoring on more than they've turned it over, and that's helped. And then there's the careless turnovers where they throw bad passes or they're not looking at what they're doing on offense. And I think I'll take a few of the transition turnovers. I was really pleased they didn't have any of those in the Penn State game. The problem was they weren't getting a transition period in that game until the very end. And so you almost have to take the good with the bad with this team a little bit on that front. But to me, yeah, I mean, if they've got to either take care of the basketball better or rebound offensively. Like, they cannot do neither of those things. That's where I really get concerned, because they cannot survive solely on their shooting, because that has not really been enough to get them through the last like 8 or 9 games.
All right, so let's go around the horn and talk about what we think is going to happen on Friday night. Andy, we'll start with you and then go to Jared and end with Galen. What's your prediction?
Yeah, I think IU wins. I think it's a bit of a slugfest a little bit early on as they feel each other out. But I think IU wins by, I'll say, between 6 and 8.
Jared.
Yeah, I'm anticipating Kent State jumping out to a lead. I think they're just going to have kind of crazy energy, and everybody that we've talked to has told us not only are they not intimidated, they want you to know that they're not intimidated. And so I expect some real physical play, you know, maybe a couple runs back and forth, and maybe we're down 2 or 3 at halftime, something like that. But then I think we really take control in the second half. You know, my gut feeling says we win by about 5. But I think maybe we end up getting like a 10 to 12 point lead, maybe at some point there in the second half. But I feel like we'll win relatively comfortably down the stretch.
Galen.
Let's see. I think we'll take an early lead, and then we'll sub Trace Jackson Davis out, and we'll go behind by like 6, and then we'll claw back to maybe within 2 at half, and then Kent State will go on a run to start the second half, and everybody's going to be freaking out. And then IU will gradually chip back in, take a permanent lead with about 9 minutes to go, and end up winning by 6, let's say. I think
it's the Maryland game, basically.
The Maryland game all over again. I mean, I think that's how this team wins. The rest has to happen, because you got to get Trace Jackson Davis some rest at some point. I really do feel like this team – I would love, and I think I said this before the Maryland game, I'd love a game where they just got out early, led the whole way. I'd even take the Wyoming game last year, you know, where it took them about 15 minutes. They took a little bit of control at that point and then ended up essentially leading by 8 the rest of the way. I would take that, but I think it's going to be a bit of a nip and tuck affair, because I think Kent State is going to be really emotional. I just don't think they're going to be able to hit enough shots at the end of the day, and Indiana will.
Indiana wins. I think the thing that's made me happy is I thought our starts have been better in the Big Ten tournament, like the first segment. And then there seems to be a lull in the second and third segment. If we can even that out, I think there's a chance that Indiana leads from start to finish. And if not, maybe at the 15-minute mark, if it's a close game to fill everyone out, then they take a lead gradually by the 10-minute mark. Trace Jackson Davis is a stud. There's no Trace Jackson Davis in their conference. There's no Jalen Hood-Schifino in their conference. So all this scared shit just needs to go away. We're a better team. And I think, you know, to validate what all the coaching staff and the players have said, you better be focused. You better be ready. And if they do, there is no way Kent State can hang. And I'm saying Indiana by 12. I just think it's going to be a game where everyone's kind of – It's a narrative of fear, or a narrative of you got to pick a 13 over a 4, and everyone drives that. I think I'm more worried about the next round and the 2-day turnaround. As you said, some statistics haven't gone Indiana's way. I'm more concerned about how we get prepared for a second game than I am for the first game.
I will say on that, though, let's also remember that mixed in with that data on some of those games where we had a 2-day turnaround, the other team had like 4 days of rest.
Right.
And here, all that's going to be equal. So don't let that data – I think that data is much more relevant for the first game than it will be for the second game.
So – and maybe that's just my fanboy stuff coming out. Like, I don't want a close game. I want to have a beer in my hand, some wings, and relaxing – for the last 4 or 5
minutes.
We
haven't lost to a team. We haven't lost to a team outside the top 50 in KenPom all season long. We've only been beaten by, you know, good teams in the top, you know, 45 or higher, and they're 70 something. So, like, that's the thing. I think we've all done a lot of good work doing scouting reports and stating the case for why we should respect the opponent. But Galen, as your tweet said earlier today, there's no reason to be afraid or have angst or, you know, some of what we're seeing where it's like, oh my gosh, how are we even going to compete? No, like, we're the favorite. We need to approach it from that sense. But just know that, if we come out and lay an egg, Kent State's good enough to clip us off.
And we're watching the example of that. I mean, Nevada was a 2-point favorite in this game. They're down 51-22, and the first half isn't over yet. And they were I think Arizona State came in 68th in KenPom. They really looked unimpressive, and they're just absolutely obliterating a Nevada team that was completely not ready to play. So that's the set. That's why I said what I said. Indiana has to come out like their hair is on fire in this game. And I think, you know, I want to see everybody, like, they look at Arkansas or they look at some of these other teams that look like they're, you know, just a flame all the time. And they're like, wow, that would be nice. I would love to see Indiana do that, even for like 10, 15 minutes. Just like, hey, guess what? You should be intimidated by us, not just from the uniforms, but the way we're playing right now. That would mean a lot. And that's honestly, like, Indiana's had a lot of runs during games like that this season, 10, 12, 14 point runs. That's what they're going to need to do, I think, a couple of times in this game if they're going to have success in it.
And it could benefit playing late on Friday. Because if you're watching and there's upsets or there's favored teams that are not coming out ready to play, then all of a sudden that gets your attention a little bit. If you were the favorite and playing at noon or at 1:40 or something on Thursday afternoon, that's maybe where you get caught. And I don't have stats to back it up, but I always remember there's a lot of games on Thursday. Oh, everyone's fired up on the underdogs and the upset and the buzzer beaters, and then all of a sudden Friday seems to be like a little bit of a letdown. Well, those veteran teams, those favorite teams are like, it's not going to happen to us. So I do think being engaged and being ready to go, but we've waited too long to be on the bracket, you know, to go in and lose to Kent State. It's not going to happen. But anyway, coming up on Assembly Call Radio, it's mailbag time. Got a bunch of great questions, and we'll answer all of them. So stick with us here on the Assembly Call.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/match. Just go to Indeed.com/match right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/match. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Let's face it, people have different sleep needs. While you love your partner, sleeping next to them might not always be the most comfortable. Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Maybe you prefer a firmer mattress and your partner needs something softer. Because of the individualized comfort that you get from Sleep Number smart beds, you and your partner will sleep better together. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. And their temperature balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. The smart beds even automatically respond and adjust to your movements, so you sleep comfortably all night long. JD Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number limited edition smart bed for a limited time. For JD Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
That was really just a self pep talk, to be honest.
That's really all we podcast for.
Yes,
self-therapy.
It is.
Yeah.
It was like, okay, be excited about IU, talk yourself, yeah, be fired up, and then, you know. So anyway,
my God, Nevada is just getting absolutely obliterated.
Are they really?
I mean, it's whatever you think it is, it's worse than.
Yeah, I mean, it's 51-22, but I don't feel like it's that close, to be honest.
I think Arizona State's got four blocks already in this game. Nevada's playing this wonky, or was playing this wonky 1-3-1 that just kept getting shredded. I mean, it's wild. Like, wild.
Ryan,
so Galen, do you know if does Scott have any neighborhood obligations that will keep him from watching the game tomorrow.
I heard they're having a bake.
I'm sure he has a neighbor neighbor who is an Arizona State or who is a Kent State fan.
There's a fox hunt happening on Friday at 3:00. He's hoping to get back in time for the game. We'll see if that happens. I think there's a formal ball, at some point in the convention center in the neighborhood. So yeah.
Man. Oh God, that's awesome.
One of the funniest things.
Just a Scott laugh.
Soundboard. Yes. Yeah, that's it. That is definitely it. Well.
Oh God.
All right, we ready to hit these questions? Right.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna leave here before you start this part.
So. All righty. Very good.
I'll handle this one, Andy.
I'll let you guys finish it up. Good talking to you. I will talk to you
late Friday night, man.
Yeah, that will be. I need to take a nap, not do a lot of heavy drinking in the middle of the afternoon. It's gonna be a challenge.
That's right. We got to pace ourselves on Friday.
Absolutely, absolutely. All right, I'll talk to you guys then.
Cool.
We'll see you, bud.
Yep.
All right, here we go.
This is Nick Zeisloft. I never miss an open three, and I never miss an episode of The Assembly Call.
Welcome back. I'm Brian Tonsoni, here with Jared Morris and Galen Clavio. Andy Bottoms had to step out and get ready for tomorrow, so there'll be the three of us asking some mailbag questions. Most of our questions were submitted via our private IU basketball discussion community, which you can learn more about and join at assemblycall.com/community. So here we go. Chad says, you just won the championship. What is Galen cooking the team? What beverage is Sony mixing up? Brian Tonsoni mixing up? And what dessert did Jared and Andy make in the kitchen together? Didn't know we'd be invited to the team celebration.
I know. Wow. All the other catering.
Couple things on this. One, I'm really glad that I get a partner in making dessert with Andy, so I don't have to do it myself. And I do appreciate the complete dismissal of Ryan's potential to contribute to the post championship game meal.
I mean, Ryan's mom is like a world class chef.
Yes,
like, she can be cooking the meals. Let's be honest with ourselves here.
Fly her in, and we'll just help. All right.
What are you cooking, Galen?
I'm not smoking the meat. I think these guys have a very, very constricted diet. And even after a championship, you got guys getting ready for the combine, whatever. I can't answer. I got to go talk to Cliff Marshall, who's up the street from me here, and be like, okay, what am I allowed? I'm assuming brisket's out. Like, am I sticking with like turkey and like some kind of vegetable protein? Like, what's the deal? We'll season it properly, but I'm a little concerned about not ruining some guys' physiques like I've ruined my own.
Yeah, and same, we can't.
But they just won the championship,
Basketball never sleeps, Jared. You got peak physical shape. Come on.
We got some young guys, so the champagne and the beer couldn't flow. So, it would have to be some water and some, Powerade or something like that. So, all right. Luke S., the Hoosiers are being featured as one of the March Madness confidential teams where they go behind the scenes each year during the tournament. Ultimately, this feels exciting for the program, players, and future recruits. It also feels like a potential distraction. Galen, is it a distraction to be followed around in that way?
I mean, the Cuban Center literally follows these guys around everywhere all the time. I think a lot of the cliche attitudes, I guess, or thought processes about what distracts players now are very old fashioned. And that's no offense meant to anybody. I just think a lot of people read from the Book of Night in 1988 and then never updated like how everybody's media oriented. Everybody's got their own cameras or they've got cameras on them. Everything is captured all the time. I don't think it's a distraction because honestly, if I'm a player, I'm largely just going out and doing my thing. I'm in practice. I'm in the locker room. I'm in the training table. I'm at Gable's Bagels this morning, getting some food before we fly to Albany. And there's pictures and video everywhere. So I think it's great that Indiana's back in the spotlight a little bit. And I think the players love it. The players don't want to be grunts that, are nameless, faceless entities that are, just playing for the name on the front of the jersey. I mean, they like the attention. It makes you feel like you're part of something bigger. And so I don't think it, I mean, we've seen teams that have won national titles get that level of attention. It doesn't seem to bother them. I don't see why it would have to bother Indiana.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just want to add on to that. I mean, I think it's a different media environment, like you said, and guys are used to just cameras being around all the time. And this is what we need to get used to. We need to get used to being in the center of attention. And I think the other thing with it is they've earned the attention. You know, they had a good season. They're a 4 seed. They're not just interesting, but they're good. And they have players who have worked hard and are compelling, to a national audience. And so I think for all those reasons, like, it's real. It's not like this is, Indiana, boy, but they haven't made the tournament in 5 years. We're going to follow them around because it gets eyeballs. This is, and there's always some of that with Indiana because Indiana does drive eyeballs. But this team earned this recognition. And so I think for all those reasons, I definitely don't have a problem with it. Don't think it'll be distracting. And it's the kind of thing we need to get used to.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about the Cuban Center and my guy, Andrew Brown, who does a lot of work there. Just love that guy. But they're constantly with cameras every game and practice and putting stuff together. So I think the players are used to it. Joel asks, while we all loved watching Trace Jackson Davis for 4 years, is anyone else looking forward to a new style of play from the Hoosiers in 23-24? Maybe a style not so dependent on tossing it to a big down low. I'll start with that. One, you can answer that question and not be negative towards Trace Jackson Davis. He's been a great, great player for Indiana, and when you have him, you throw the ball down low. The disagreement that I've had is that what do you do when that's taken away? What other options are there for other players? I think those are legitimate concerns. But you throw the ball down to Trace Jackson Davis as much as possible. But I will say, yeah, I am looking forward to seeing what is in the bag of tricks from Mike Woodson next year with a different roster. And you got to believe that he's got a boatload of plays and sets and ideas about offensive basketball with a variety of players, or he wouldn't be in this position. So I am kind of looking forward to it, but not ready for it yet. I want 6 more games and a celebratory meal at Galen's house. And so until then, let's keep throwing it down low.
Yeah, check back with us the first road game when the offense is struggling and, we don't know who to go to for the easy bucket. But I think, we're going to spend all offseason, inevitably. We're going to spend the first part of the offseason putting Trace's career into context and trying to see what happens with the transfer portal. And then we'll talk ourselves into whatever roster there is, how they will function, and it'll be interesting because it's different. And I think that is true, and there will be a lot of enthusiasm when the season starts, and it'll be interesting. But it's also going to be a bit of a transition, and I have a feeling we may be it may take until next year to fully appreciate just how much of a rock Trace was this year. But absolutely, it will be interesting to see a bit of a different style, especially if it features more 3-point shooting, which would be nice.
This is like the 5th best offensive efficiency Indiana's had in terms of national rankings since 2003. I understand people get frustrated with certain aspects of the offense. There's certainly things that I have criticized about the offense, but it's the 28th best offense in the entirety of college basketball. And you have a player in Trace Jackson Davis that is, averaging about 1.2 points per possession, every possession he uses. And that includes when he turns the ball over. And when he makes one free throw instead of two. I understand that fans are a little bit put off by the style, but it works. And I think that Mike Woodson would have been doing a disservice to his team and to Trace Jackson Davis if he didn't build the offense around him and try to maximize what he could do, because I just don't think Indiana's as effective or as successful this year without. Now, it'll be interesting without that. We've certainly seen Indiana transition through a bunch of different types of offenses in the past with a bunch of different people leading those offenses and scoring. And maybe a bunch of jumpers is more aesthetically pleasing, but they're not as efficient. And I think we're probably going to look back on this era as something that was unique, something that we won't see again for a long time. This dominant of a post presence, this reliable of a post presence, having the offense spread out more is probably makes everybody feel a little bit better, but I don't know that it's going to be any better as far as actual results are concerned.
Also, let's be honest. Right now, if you had to project Indiana's leading scorer next year, who would it be?
I guess it'd be Xavier Johnson if he comes back.
Maybe. But who would be number two? Malik Renew.
the unnamed the unnamed wing that they're bringing in the transfer portal, I think, is probably, you know, and it sounds like I'm making a joke, but like Jalen Pickett was that guy that Penn State brought in. I think this is part of the issue. It's like our entire conceptualization of rosters is now wrong because IU's going to go out and find one, maybe two of their top four scorers next year, and we don't even know who they are yet. It's like saying you're going to have kids with this person that you haven't met yet. And, you know, it's really hard to get your head wrapped around, but that's essentially how it's going to work.
Yeah.
And you know, but thinking about it too, that's where Coach Woodson with the NBA and constant every year, new roster with free agency and that, you know, that could be a strength of his being able to mesh people into a style of play or figuring out a style of play that fits the people that he can bring in. So you're absolutely right. We have really no clue what that's going to look like next week or next year. Hopefully we know what it looks like next week. Throw the ball into TJD in the Sweet 16, yeah. Right? A couple of questions here. Both were talking about the up and down nature of Indiana's performance. So I'm going to try to combine those here. Richard Hauerstein says, the Jekyll and Hyde, he goes, what team do you think shows up in the tournament? And what can we gather from this season at points to which team shows up? And then Laura kind of piggybacked on that. She said she also thinks the team's somewhat Jekyll and Hyde. We brought it up about the engagement and wondered if motivation for professional-bound players affects, you know, we've seen it in football. I guess she's heading towards, you know, people opting out and anything. Is there a risk of injury weighing heavier than winning the championship? You know, is there a burning desire to win or a burning desire for the next step at this point of the season? So there's a lot in there in those two questions. But is this Indiana team up and down? And is there any player motivation with some of the people heading to the draft? Those two things. Galen, go ahead.
I mean, they're absolutely up and down. We've seen a lot of that, especially over the last month. What's the cause of that? I think it's probably just mental fatigue. I mean, it's been a long season. Everybody's had to take on extra weight with Xavier Johnson being out and with Race Thompson being out for a while. I mean, I understand, but again, I kind of look at are the draft-bound players disengaged? It's kind of like do the video cameras cause like distraction thing. I think that it's actually reversed. Trace Jackson Davis, like if you watch that guy, if you watch the way he interacts with his teammates in the huddle, if you listen to his post-game press conference after Penn State, like this guy absolutely wants to win games and championships, wants to leave a mark on this program beyond just the statistics. Jalen Uchifino has played his butt off. He has played 40 minutes a game every game. That's not a guy going out there and saying, I got to save myself for the draft. Honestly, the problems with this team that have created the Jekyll and Hyde issues is what we said earlier, which is the supporting cast just decides not to show up on some days, you know, and that is a real problem. And I feel bad for the two poles of this team, basically Jackson Davis and Uchifino, because a lot of times they go out and they're like, after about 5 to 10 minutes, like, all right, well, he's not shooting and he's not rebounding and he's already in foul trouble. I got to do everything. And that ends up putting a lot of pressure on them. It ends up making them overextend and do things that they probably wouldn't do. You know, sometimes it's beautiful. I'm stealing some of the material from the Crimson Cast we recorded earlier today. Sometimes you get the Jalen Uchifino at Purdue game where he's just hitting from all over the place. Sometimes you don't. And you end up with a situation where people are overextending. I think the real issue here with motivation and getting into it is more the rest of the players right now. That's ultimately the difference between Indiana going out in the first weekend and Indiana being able to survive and go beyond that.
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, as far as, you know, guys looking toward the pros, I don't think comparing college football to college basketball makes a lot of sense, because in college football, you're going to a bowl game. And like, you're not competing for a championship. You're just competing for a bowl game. And if it's not,
and she didn't, you know, she didn't say that. I just kind of threw that in there because she was talking about the risk of injury. And are they thinking about the personal resume? So I want to make sure that Laura knows that I kind of threw that in there. That I think that's where she was
headed.
You're
playing football. You're playing basketball.
Right,
you're
exactly.
You're likely
right.
to suffer a career-ending injury
to that. So that was my comparison, not yes. Laura's. But I think she was saying, is there a foot, a mindset with some of these athletes that direction?
See,
instead of
I would be more – I remember we talked about this when Indiana went to the NIT with Romeo. You know, Romeo didn't end up playing. Now, there is one where you could say, okay, what is Romeo really going to get out of playing in the NIT?
Right.
Is he going to be
right.
motivated? But for the NCAA tournament – how many guys have we seen their draft stock go up because they had a big NCAA tournament? And this is what gives me confidence is Jalen has been a big game player. He hasn't always shown up at 5 o'clock for Iowa, you know, or for, you know, some random games in the middle of the week. But when the lights have been bright, he's usually been really good. And there are no brighter lights than March Madness. And he fully understands that he could possibly put himself in the lottery if he goes out and has a series of big games. So I think we'll get, and not to mention, he's played 40 minutes, two straight games. So if there was any kind of lack of motivation, you know, you would have seen it. I don't worry about that at all. I think he will be 100% locked in. I think we'll get his best.
I just want to touch on something like Galen brings up that I think sometimes Trace and Jalen Hood-Schifino have that weight on them all the time. That's one area where I'd like to see the coaching staff, you know, go one or two sets for someone else to get them into the flow of the game. We've talked about that incessantly, that – sometimes I think the emphasis is on those two and then the others are just, okay, get whatever happens. And you are flipping a coin. Sometimes they're ready and sometimes they're not. That's one thing I think the coaching staff could massage a little bit. But yeah, I don't think the players, I think they want to win. If you play this game, the tournament is what you dream about for a long, long time. I think both of those guys want to go and show that they're not only just good players, but they're part of a winning program.
Yeah, and if you're worried about that, don't pick Alabama to go far in the tournament.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, I mean,
absolutely.
There's teams all over the country that are dealing with that, so I don't think that's a worry.
Jeffrey Greider says, if this team suffers a loss to Kent State, will this impact your perception of the season? Jared, we'll go your direction first.
Inevitably, yes, because, you know, the opportunity cost of losing a first-round NCAA tournament game is getting to go on and play another one. And, you know, it's just a reality of college basketball that what happens in March often colors our perception of the season. And, you know, you almost have to force yourself at times to kind of take a step back, right? You know, you think about the 2013 season. We were all devastated when Indiana lost that game to Syracuse. And really, the whole last month of that season was not great basketball. It wasn't really a whole lot of fun. You know, it was just like, oh, we've got these huge expectations. Thank God that ball rolled off at Michigan and we won the Big Ten title. As time has passed, you know, I think history has treated that season more fairly, which is this was a really good season. It didn't end how we wanted it to. There's disappointments. We understand why it happened, but this was overall a good season. I think there'd be some of that, you know, and to be fair, you wouldn't even have the two wins to get to the Sweet 16, you know, so it'd be a little bit more disappointing. But I think there's a little extra weight on it because we all want it for Trace so bad. And so I think it would be, I think the way that I would look at it is less like, you know, anger and frustration and more just kind of disappointment and sadness to a certain extent that, you know, we didn't go farther for Trace. And I think over time that would kind of dissipate and we'd remember, hey, you know, there were injuries. This was a good season. You get a 4 seed. That's a good year. But yeah, it's inevitably going to leave a bad taste in your mouth. I would just, you know, again, I think they're going to win, but I would just caution everybody, you don't want to let that one 40-minute performance just color everything. But inevitably, there's going to be kind of a grieving period, I think, if that happens. And that is warranted because you put so much on it, you're disappointed, but then hopefully you come around later and realize, okay, on balance, you know, this was still a successful season.
Yeah, I agree. I think with the injuries and things, and we've been asked this question in previous shows here before the tournament and even before the Big Ten, that the season has been successful given the injuries and where they've been. It's not complete. That's the way I would say it. It's not complete. Yeah. You win a game or two in the tournament and you kind of complete the season. And it was never really an opportunity to be what Indiana's going to be because of the injuries. They never really fully had an opportunity to see how that could play out. So I don't think the whole season, and I do think time always looks better on full seasons after a while. We do. Leland brings up, you know.
Wait, I think Galen wanted to jump in on that one, Coach.
Oh, go ahead.
I want to just drop this in. We talked about it on Crimson Cast earlier today. This is 2023. Indiana's a four seed. That's a protected seed in the NCAA tournament. This is only the third time Indiana's been a protected seed since 2001. I want that to sink in for a minute for everybody, because I think it's important that we realize that we are holding this program and these players right now to a standard that should not be there. This has been a mediocre at best college basketball program for the last two decades plus. I mean, you really can go all the way back to 1995 when things started to decompose, I guess you could say, for part of the Knight era. And, you know, the question of whether this season would be considered like a failure, or, you know, how negatively a loss in the first round would impact, it would hurt, absolutely. But the idea that IU is in the national conversation, is one of the top 15 teams in the country based upon what they did during a season, that has to matter if IU fans are actually serious about being a competitive program again, because they haven't been. This has not been a competitive program. This has not been a program that's performed during the regular season, which means you don't get a chance to perform in the postseason. Being in the position Indiana's in right now, regardless, frankly, in my opinion, of what happens on Friday, this has still been a successful season. It's a season we should look back on and say that was a building block that got us to the next thing. A lot of IU fans want to jump from 1993 to the present, and that's not where they're at, and that's not how this stuff works. And I just think that that's important that everybody keep in mind, because unfortunately, I think it puts an undue amount of pressure, not just on the players, but also on us as fans and as people that follow the team.
And so it doesn't give you the chance to enjoy it either.
Yeah.
It's self-defeating as a fan.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. It's among the worst types of fandom you can have, where you're just complaining all the time, not realizing that what you're complaining about doesn't actually exist.
If we would have sat down and had a podcast and said we're going to lose starters throughout the year, one for 20 some plus games, would you take the 15th best seed in the NCAA tournament? You're off the rails, right? Everyone would have said that's not possible. Maybe making the tournament, maybe being where Maryland is would be where maybe the expectations would be. Well, we developed two outstanding young men and players that are NBA bound. So I do see it. Leland mentioned, you know, the losses to Cleveland State and to Richmond, and there is a tradition of Indiana losing in the first round that some fans have that horrible memory of. I think that affects fandom as well. Like, we don't want that feeling again, right?
You realize the Richmond loss happened in the Ronald Reagan administration.
Leland and I are from that era. And I both, you know,
how long ago that was. And that was great. Like, to be a three seed and lose to Cleveland State, to be a four seed, lose to Richmond. And he had a great regular season and you ran into a buzzsaw. The number of teams that lose in the first round of the NCAA that are really good is it's a long list, and it happens every year. So I think getting torqued out about that, I know everybody wants glory. I get that. I want it too. But I also think that you get to glory by continuing to put yourself in a position where you can take advantage of the position, not just have it happen. And so if this team could make the Final Four, amazing season. This team could lose in the first round, I think still amazing season, because it's such a step forward from where this team's been the last 6 or 7 years.
Well said. Well said. We've talked about Patrick, we answered your question, putting aside the upset narratives, what were KSU's weaknesses and what does IU need to do? We talked about that in the main segment. Max asked, do you see Geronimo or Banks getting minutes barring foul trouble? Are we pretty set with the seven-man rotation now, given it's win or go home?
I'd be shocked, honestly. I think Coach tried to give Jordan Geronimo some minutes these last few games. You know, he wasn't really able to do anything with those minutes. I think Caleb Banks played a role of being an energy guy during the dregs of the Big Ten season when you needed energy. But I think this team has a tight seven-man rotation. And depending on the game, sometimes Malik and Tamar are the better options, and sometimes Race and Trey are the better options. But I think those are the guys, and I think it would take, you know, either a blowout or, yes, foul trouble. But I don't think it's in the primary game plan to play any more than those seven. I'd be really surprised, I guess. I would say.
I mean, Woodson is so matchup focused. I know, Coach, you've seen this throughout the course of the year. Like, he's not going to play big guys against small players. And so I don't think Geronimo would have gotten in regardless. And I just don't think Banks isn't the type of player. Woodson, to his credit, I think long term, has tried to safeguard the psychological well-being of his freshmen. And he's only put them into spots where he feels like they're going to get some positive benefit and not in a situation where they could feel like they blew a game or did something bad, which is why I don't think you'll see CJ Gunn in this game. If you saw Geronimo, I think it would be because of extreme foul trouble, which seems somewhat unlikely, cross our fingers, to happen in this one. I think the rotation's set where it is.
I agree. Kurt asked, and we've talked about this too, so I think we'll move quickly through this. If you were coach, what are some of the sets or game plan you would go to? We talked about throwing it inside. We talked about then the ball screen stuff. We talked about pace and transition. So I think we've answered that in the main segment. So let's end with John's question here. With TJD and Hood Schifino leading the way, IU comes into most games with maybe the two best players on the court. It all comes down to the bench. Who do you have the most confidence in upping their game in tournament to be a consistent threat if we make a run in the NCAA tournament? Galen, you've talked, made some really good points about the bench needs to be ready to play and engaged from the start throughout the tournament. Who's that guy that's most likely to be the most consistent off of our top two?
I feel like this is a trick. They're not giving me a lot to work with. I mean, it has to be
there's Tamar five Bates. Guys, right?
It has to be Bates. You're in the tournament. You are short on guards. It's a guards game. And you have to have shooting, and you have to have somebody that can handle the basketball, and you have to have somebody that can defend other guards. And, you know, Bates, over the last few games, I've been as critical of Tamar Bates as anybody. Bates has not taken a lot off the table, and he's actually added some things in that time period. His defense has been much better than it was earlier in the year, and his shooting has been more confident. That's absolutely what Indiana has to have. And it's not even like a luxury. It's a requirement. If Indiana is going to win one game, let alone two or three in the tournament, is that Bates has to show up, has to be able to go in, spell, either Kopp or Galloway, because it seems like Hood Schifino is just going to play every available minute from this point forward. But he has to be able to slide into either the two or the three, do what he needs to do defensively, and then get some shots off and not be hesitant to do so. That's the thing he does the best on this team right now, is just launch it when he gets the ball. Indiana needs more of that, and he needs to be able to make them.
You make a good point about Tamar, and the way the question was asked, upping their game. But you have a couple other options to go to with Galloway and Kopp, who I don't think played extremely well in the Big Ten tournament, up to their capabilities. And the comment that I really thought was great earlier was, no one can be below average on the bench if you want to make a run. Like, you've got to play to your abilities and then up, according to Kurt, up your game. So I think there's room for both Galloway and Kopp to be more aggressive with taking shots, to be better with the ball handling as well. But right there, you talked about the three perimeter players. I think Renew has come in and done a really good job. If he keeps playing the way he's done, he's going to give some relief to the top two post players. But, yeah, those three perimeter players need to really, really bring something, not only to win Friday night, but then to advance to the Sweet 16 and have a chance to advance. Jared?
Well, I will add to this. So over the last three games, when Tamar and Malik have played together, and I think they've played 47 minutes together over the last three games, Indiana's net rating as a team is 33. And what that means is, over 100 possessions, they would outscore their opponents by 33. I think in actuality, they're outscoring the opposition by 16 or 17 points. Point being, Indiana has been much better with Malik and Tamar on the court, and that's matched what we've seen. And so now, will that continue? You know, we don't know. It's a great sign. And a lot of times you do see young players kind of hit their stride. They've been through ups and downs. I'm cautiously confident that it can continue. But it also kind of pulls me back around to another point that I think is important, which is that, you know, Trey Galloway and Race Thompson, when those two guys have played together, in the two games against Purdue, when they were on the court together, it was like a plus 15. They were dynamite. And you can think back to all the plays those guys made. If you remove those two games in Big Ten play, Indiana's lineups with Trey and Race have a negative net rating. And that's your starting lineup. So that doesn't mean that they've always been bad, and some of that is race going through ups and downs, and you know, and so there's maybe reasons for that. But I think those guys have to be better. And Race is going to get time. You know, Woody's clearly going to trust him. We're one game removed from Race struggling and Malik playing really well and Malik not playing inexplicably for the last 15, 16 minutes. And so if Race is going to get that kind of leeway, he's got to be better. You know, like we need end of Michigan Race, not the guy who, you know, at times is making like freshman, sophomore level mental mistakes, it seems. And, you know, I think, you know, everything he's, you know, dealing with, I think there's a lot of stuff there just physically. And sometimes that can drain on you mentally, like all that stuff. So I don't, you know, I don't mean it as a criticism and I don't mean it to say it without empathy that maybe he's, you know, just struggling physically. I think all those things are true, but it's NCAA tournament time, you know, and there's only 200 minutes to go around. And so if he's going to take minutes from a guy as talented and productive right now as Malik, he's by far second best rebounder. Race is going to have to play better. So I think it's not just Tamar and some of those other guys, but you've got to get vintage Race Thompson. And we've seen it, but it's just been, you know, kind of fewer and further between than I think what we need.
So, John, we've talked about everyone in the seven-man rotation needing to up their game other than the top two. So I don't know that we really answered your question about which one in particular. So I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing.
That's it. We're done. No more questions.
All right, Ryan, we're out of here. Well, that's going to do it for this week's episode of the Assembly Call. If you want to see us do the show live, join us at assemblycall.com on Thursday nights for the live broadcast of our Assembly Call radio recording. Thanks to Bob Thompson for producing our music. Thanks to John Ringer of rigdesign.com for designing our logos. And thank you for listening. Until then,
take it from me, Jordan Halls. Keep your elbow in and your eyes on the rim. And go Hoosiers.
All right, I got to get out of here, folks. Thank you.
That's defense.
Hey, the show's over. Here I come, Coach Tonsoni.
By the way, I hit the wrong Woody clip. Sorry.
That's okay.
Hey, that's defense.
So I'm sure you guys talked about this already, but how incredible are the home field apparel shirts that they released today?
It was really nice.
Those are awesome. The Grace Berger McKenzie home shirt, that's one of the best. Like, of the home field designs, like shirts that they've designed, I think that's one of the best ones they've done. I ordered that one in a heartbeat. They just
damn
keep
home field
coming through. I know.
I know. Seriously.
How dare they do their jobs well, right?
Exactly. It's just constantly on my feed. It's just... I'm going to have to mute him every once in a while just to save my bank account for a week or two.
Yeah, I don't think we should ever do the math on if we are net positive or net negative with home field apparel, given what they've paid us in sponsorships and what we end up spending right back with them. Let's just not do that math. Oh, gosh. Right. I'm so excited for tomorrow. Best day of the year. Best 2 days of the year. Wall-to-wall hoops, and we have awesome. The very last game. Our house, we have two late games. A&M's
second to last game.
Oh, are we second to last? Okay.
Yeah.
And we have A&M's in the late window tomorrow, and IU's in the late window.
Yeah, it should be interesting. Yeah, we've got the very last one is technically Arizona or where'd it go? I think it's Penn State. No, that's today. I've lost track.
Yeah, Penn State plays A&M.
Maybe we are last. I don't know. We are the second to last. It's the
TCU.
It's TCU versus whoever wins. Well, TCU Arizona State. I think we can safely say at this point.
Yeah, Nevada is not making that trip.
Man, what a joke. Jesus. All right, guys. Well, as always, fun. I'm sure we'll talk with you soon. So,
all right, Gabe. Thanks. Absolutely. Thanks.
Looking forward to listening to Crimson Cast.
Yeah, it's up. So knock yourself out.
I'm looking forward to Scott talking us into winning a national championship and then talking us into losing and everything falling apart.
You'll be surprised at his take.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, all right. Have a good one, guys. Take it easy.
Night. All right. See you guys.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader, like that car right in your tail. Or if you're tailgating right now, all those cars doubling as kitchens and living rooms are on AutoTrader too. Are you working out and listening to this ad at the same time? Well, multitasking pro, cars like the ones in the gym parking lot are for sale on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.